Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? We welcome you into the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Go here with you, joined alongside, well, I'll tell you what. If you like Matt Harmon, you are going to love today's show. If you hate Matt Harmon, just turn off your podcast.
I was going to say, damn, everybody just turn the show off.
It's just me and Harmon today. No Alex Gailhar, who's still doing some legal stuff. Not his own.
Yeah, for once.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
No Marcus Grant. He's doing famous stuff.
TV stuff, yep. Right.
Adam Rank, no. He's doing some famous stuff as well. It's just you and me, pal.
This is so weird. I mean, well, also like my grand plan of slowly taking everybody out
right.
until this is eventually just NFL Harmon live. I was talking with producer Christina before we got about how I'm going to work that out.
That's good.
Yeah, we have a plan to take it over.
That's good. We got a whole plan.
It's going to be Harmon show from now
It's going to be the Harmon show.
Yeah, I mean, Christina will chime in. She'll have a good back and forth.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so everybody else is gone. I'll soon eliminate you. Don't worry. That's coming next.
Okay, that's good.
And then it'll just be my one-hour podcast on my takes.
On feelings and such?
I mean, we will have a feelings segment.
I see.
Speaking of which, we're kind of coming off a big feelings weekend, I guess.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it.
We had the franchise wedding.
Yeah.
That was fun.
He's alive.
Yeah, he has been tweeting again, so he's alive. But that was good. That was a good time. It was good to have
Stronghold
all back. Yeah, the Stronghold is all back together. By the way, I don't know if you saw this. I put it in Slack, but yesterday I was doing a couple interviews with some players. I talked to Christian Kirk, the wide receiver draft prospect, and Roby Coleman, the Rams slot corner. I get on my phone to pull up like the voice memo app.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let me, and I'm like,
oh God,
I have a 2 minute and 30 second recording just titled Mrs. Co. Do you remember me interviewing your wife?
Yeah, you interviewed my wife.
Yeah. At the,
with
wedding.
The voice memo function.
Yeah. So I went back and listened to it yesterday. And
is it awesome?
Oh, it's illuminating. It's illuminating. That's why as a good journalist, I'm there, you know, getting the scoop on Mrs. Co. And, you know, she's kind of been this mysterious figure. It's the first time any of us have met her.
She doesn't go by Mrs. Co., but yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm like, oh, I better. And she starts.
She kept a maiden name for anyone wondering about that.
Right. Well, she goes into the story about how you guys met. And I said, hang on a second. Can I get this on the record? Which I got on the record. And let's just say, if you ever wrong me, I'll just release that to the public.
I feel as if we should just release it.
I don't know. I need to, I need to screen it a few more times.
We need to call through that, yep.
Yeah, might have to have Christina help me edit it with some bleeps.
Oh, some serious bleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we can clean it up.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well,
in the first episode after you're gone and it's just me.
Yeah. That'll be the first segment.
We'll air that bad boy.
If you're wondering why James Coe is not on the podcast, here you go. Boom. Producer Christina, what's going on? How you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys?
I'm wonderful. I'm ready to get into it, man. We got a big show in front of us here today. Going to be talking all things NFL, all things New York Jets. Allegedly, we will get Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News on the phone. He's a columnist for the New York Daily News, as we said, as well as a Jets insider. He will give us some details, I will hope, on that massive trade on the draft, plus all these different signings that's going on. With the Jets as well. I thought they actually overachieved a little bit despite their, they had a bad record last year. But I thought they overachieved a bit. I thought they were a lot closer. I think they are a lot closer than a lot of folks might give them credit for. But a lot of signings, a lot of different things going on in the offseason as well. So let's get right into it. We'll start your show with your top fantasy headlines. News. Jordy Nelson signed with the Oakland Raiders, who then cut Michael Crabtree, who turned around and then signed with the Baltimore Ravens. After they voided the crazy contract they were about to give Ryan Grant, who then turned around and signed with the Colts. Got it?
A lot went on.
A lot of dominoes falling there, and all starts with Jordy Nelson. Okay, so he goes to the Raiders. What does it mean, Matt Harmon?
I really don't like this move at all for the Raiders because I feel like they got worse at the wide receiver 2 position. I don't know about you, but I think that right now Michael Crabtree is a better player than Jordy Nelson is right now.
I think they're about the same. I think their price was about the same. I think their skills are about the same. I think this is a move in the right direction from a culture standpoint, a leadership standpoint. I don't know, man. I think for me anyways, I think the talent is a lateral move. I think it's a move in the right direction if they want to try to develop both Amari Cooper and Derek Carr.
Yeah.
If they want to give the reins, finally, the passing game reins, to Derek Carr and Amari Cooper, I think this makes at least some sense there. Because, listen, man, when Michael Crabtree is on the field, Derek Carr favors him, tends to look for him. I know that Amari Cooper was coming off a horrendous 2017.
Yeah.
But the Raiders got to know what they got in Amari Cooper. Does he fall flat on his face in 2018 when given the lead roles? Because it's funny you say this, right? Like, as a number two wide receiver, for the last 3 years, it's been Michael Crabtree.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you know
it has been. It has been. He's led the team in targets, I think, in 2015 and 2016. It's been – Hey, last year was a bad year for Crabtree because of injuries and everything, and the whole Oakland offense really fell apart.
They did.
If you look at Derek Carr, though, and just the Raiders' passing game over the last 2 years, even back in their successful season, what they've been really poor on is these contested tight window passes. Carr is a really timing-based, anticipatory passer that gets the ball out really quickly, which was a great fit with Michael Crabtree. It's why he revived his career with Oakland, but... looking at the next-gen stats, actually, in 2016, Derek Carr ranked 19th on passer rating on tight window throws, and obviously last year regressed all the way to 33rd in the NFL. With a 58.2 and a 21.8 rating on those tight window throws. Like, he led the NFL on interceptions on those throws. So I thought they needed a player that could kind of help on those contested passes. And I don't know that that's Jordy Nelson anymore. Actually, Packers quarterbacks had a 0.0 passer rating throwing to him on those tight window passes. It's not good. And before you come in with like, oh, well, it's all Brett Hundley, even when Aaron Rodgers played to start the year, he had a, I believe, 0 passer rating on those plays. So 15 catches on 19 targets. I just don't know that this is really the move that upgrades their pass game. I think it's a lateral move at best. I get it that it's about culture and leadership and all that, and John Gruden wants to set a tone. But to me, I don't think their offense is any better than what it was last year. I don't really see how they've improved with this move.
I don't think they've improved. Like I said, I think from a talent standpoint, it's lateral to me. But I will say this. On the outside, Jordy Nelson last year was just awful.
Mm-hmm.
But from the slot perspective, if Jordy Nelson embraces his role, maybe takes that like late career Larry Fitzgerald step forward and says, hey, man, let me be a slot guy. Let me be that reliable slot guy. You talk about Derek Carr being a timing-based quarterback. I could not agree with you more. And that's kind of why I think they get a technician like Jordy Nelson. If he's running around in the slot, hey, I don't know, man. I mean, I think from a talent standpoint, explosive athleticism standpoint, I think it's lateral. But maybe. It might be a step in the right direction, might be a slight improvement if Jordy Nelson wants to move to the inside.
So my theory on even top-level wide receivers, you know, like what you would hope Amari Cooper is going to be, or a guy like even Julio Jones or a Michael Thomas, you know, A.J. Green, these verifiable wide receiver ones, I think you should be giving those guys, you know, 30%, 25% of their targets out of the slot. Because those guys are high percentage. I mean, those routes are high percentage.
Yep.
You accumulate production. You build confidence in your wide receivers.
Mixes up the defense a little
bit,
too.
Mixes up the defense. And, again, you're seeing less tight physical press man coverage than you were on the outside where you've got a sideline and everything like that to help out the cornerback. And if you look at Amari Cooper's best game this past year, that 200-yard game against the Chiefs.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, that was – and a lot of that, even though he was still dropping passes, still had some failures at the catch point.
Yeah.
They were running him at about 30% rate out of the slot. And I think that I would love to see them do that more with Cooper this year. Don't just strictly use him on the outside on the boundary. Mix him up. And I just hope that Jordy Nelson's signing, again, it doesn't really mess with that plan. Because to me, I still think they need to add, you know, maybe one more outside receiver. And maybe they can complete that move. But to me, I just see this as kind of a lateral move. And I'm not really excited about anybody's fantasy potential because of it.
Per Next Gen Stats, we talk about Jordy Nelson potentially moving into the slot. And I hope he does. Because, you know, when we looked at what his numbers were like last year, weeks 1 through 5, with a healthy Aaron Rodgers, when Jordy Nelson was lined up outside per Next Gen Stats, he had 2.4 yards of separation. The NFL average on the outside for a wide receiver is 2.5.
Yep.
So he was below the NFL average. Now, when he moved into the slot, okay, his separation was 3.5 yards per target. The NFL average for a wide receiver in the slot was 2.8.
Yeah.
So it kind of paints that picture of, hey, here's this guy who used to be an elite outside wide receiver, still a great technician as a wide receiver, does not fully utilize or doesn't depend on 100% his athleticism, more his route running, precision route running. I think that's the right move.
Yeah, me too. So if they're going to use him in one way, I hope that's it. I think the metrics there paint a great picture of how he should be used going forward.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's the way it goes in Oakland. Again, I just worry that for their team building sake, I don't think that they got any better on offense.
There you go. All right, trickle down effect. Michael Crabtree then, again, goes from Oakland, got cut by them, and then now he goes to a wide receiver needy team in the Baltimore Ravens. Mm-hmm. I think the target share should be about the same for him, 2017 to 2018, but has his athleticism, has his skills degraded in any way, where you're saying to yourself, I don't know about Michael Crabtree in Baltimore.
I think Crabtree can really thrive in Baltimore. I mean, if Flacco, if you look at the receivers that he has had success with, and there hasn't been like a big fantasy monster in Baltimore, but it's been these Derek Mason, Steve Smith guys, kind of Matt Williamson, who used to work for ESPN, does a lot of different stuff now, including some fantasy work. He always says that Flacco likes to have his whoopee, you know, the little blanket that makes him feel good to rely on.
And who's that?
And I think it could be Michael Crabtree in this scenario, you know, a guy who – I think he could easily soak up 130 targets with the Ravens here because, I mean, their passing game is just bereft of talent.
There's nobody there.
Yeah, I love John Brown. I mean, everybody knows I like John Brown.
Yeah.
If he's healthy, like, I think he could be a really great piece to this passing game. It sounds like Ozzie Newsome is really excited about him from their introductory press conference. Love what he had to say about Brown. But, again, health is a big question. For Crabtree, if he's out there, if he's 100%, I think he'd be the easy guy to lead the team in targets. I don't think he's going to produce great fantasy numbers, but he could easily catch 80 balls there.
Yeah.
And also
that's what I got him for.
Yeah, it sounds about right. Like I think a solid like maybe mid to low end wide receiver too. And you'll probably get him at a bargain, honestly.
Yeah.
And even so, I think like late career Anquan Boldin, those are the sort of numbers
that would be nice.
You're looking for. One other note on the Ravens passing game, I keep wanting to bring this up until the draft happens. You know, Daniel Jeremiah, our NFL Network draft analyst, used to work for the Ravens. He continues to beat the drum that they could draft a quarterback. He's mocked him a quarterback at a couple spots.
Where do they pick?
They pick in the middle of the first round, I think pick 16. So I don't know.
So either they're going to have to move up or take Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, and I think if you're Ozzie Newsome, it makes sense because he's retiring after this year.
Who's retiring?
Ozzie Newsome. Uh-huh. Yeah. He's going to be gone as the general manager. I think the organization still likes Joe Flacco a lot. I think they like him more than the outside likes him. But
okay.
I think if you're the GM, it would make a lot of sense to, okay, let me help this veteran quarterback that we still like kind of end his career on a high note, but let me also secure the future of this organization by taking a quarterback here in what's a pretty good class, at least 1 to 5. And maybe they take one of the, you know, a Mason Rudolph or a Kyle Lauletta or whatever to groom for later years.
Right.
But that's
if they wanted to go later in the draft.
Yeah, that's just something I think to keep an eye on when we're talking about the Ravens passing game. You know, Joe Flacco obviously doesn't inspire much confidence at this point in his career.
I mean, he's 33 years old. He's going to be 33 going into next season, right? So it's not – for quarterback, he's not old.
Yeah, he's just been really bad.
Yeah,
the last 2 years
he's
been real bad.
Oh, my God, it's been awful. That being said, he hasn't had anybody to throw to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the running game has been stifled as well. So it's been – I think Harbaugh's done a great job of carrying the talent that they have, but they don't have a lot of talent on the offensive side. They've tried to address it. They failed.
Yeah, they just keep swinging and missing at wide receiver. I mean, Breshad Perriman.
Yep.
All these guys, you know, they let Torrey Smith go. Steve Smith retires.
Yep.
They just keep having to transition. There's really no communication there between the passing. I mean, Macklin was a failure signing.
Oh,
Mike Wallace is walking. So,
yeah,
they've just not had a lot of consistency. But I think Flacco has a pretty decent amount to do with that, too.
Yeah, I think so. I'd love to see them surround Joe Flacco with at least – they need one – big receiver. And I think size has been an issue on the outside for Baltimore as well. Joe Flacco just hasn't had that guy to be able to lean on, to rely on. So I don't know. I'd love to see them go big there. If they're in the middle of the first round, I mean, hell, if Cortland Sutton is there, I wouldn't hate that move at all for Baltimore if that's there for them. A Sutton Michael Crabtree combo would be interesting, actually, on the outside for Joe Flacco.
Yeah, no, for sure. Ben Albright, who is a radio host in Denver and he's an insider and all that, he actually tweeted out, I think, last week that a free agent said to him, like, I don't think I'll be going to Baltimore because I don't think that I have the skill set that they're looking for, which is just run real deep and hope to get a PI flag.
There it is.
So that they have not
that's
really
it.
Had much of a message in terms of what are we looking for in draft
that's
process.
It. So that is it. That's what Joe Flacco likes to do. All right. So, again, we talk about the trickle-down effect. Jordy goes to Oakland. Michael Crabtree goes to Baltimore. Now, remember, Baltimore would not be able to sign. Well, I guess they could have maybe, but they probably wouldn't have signed Michael Crabtree if they had gone through with their original deal to wide receiver Ryan Grant. Mm. Listen, man, I mean, failed medical, it just screams buyer's remorse to me. It just screamed. They got skewered.
I read the mentions.
They got destroyed online, over the airwaves, everywhere for this signing. They originally want to sign Ryan Grant to a four-year, $29 million deal. What's his market value? Well, listen, he just signed with the Colts for a one-year, $5 million deal. The four-year 29 was just so outrageously over the top.
Well, $14.5 million guaranteed.
What are you guys doing, Baltimore?
Yeah, it was very confusing.
But they got out of it. It just, to me, was shady, man.
I don't really have a take on the whole medical thing.
That is shady, bro.
When it comes to, yeah, obviously they overvalued Ryan Grant with that first contract.
Buyer's remorse.
I think he's a pretty decent player. I mean, but not a plus star, like not a starter.
No.
You know?
I think he's a great reserve if you've got him as a reserve.
Sure, sure, yeah.
I mean, even the 1 year, $5 million, that's a good price for him, I think. I mean, he could prove everybody wrong and just ball out. Maybe he was underappreciated in Washington. But bottom line was, man, he was a backup wide receiver there.
Yeah, he was like kind of a coach's pet is what it seemed like in Washington. You know, he would consistently get playing time over. I mean, when they had, you know, Terrell Pryor and Josh Doxton there in Washington, they never really wanted to seem to put the – when Pryor was healthy before he went on IR and Doxton was starting to take his job.
Yep.
They didn't ever seem to want to take Grant off the field for one of those guys because they liked what he brought as like a flanker possession receiver type.
Right.
Because he practices well and he runs good routes and blah, 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 blah. And they didn't ever want to put one of those guys a flanker over Grant. So whatever reason they liked him, the Ravens seemed to like something about him, but now he goes to a passing game in Indianapolis, where they need help.
Oh, like, my God.
After T.Y. Hilton, Shontavious Jones, Colby Listonby.
No.
Like ghosts of preseason daily fantasy past, you know? So I think that he's actually walked into kind of a maybe even a better opportunity here if Andrew Luck is healthy. I mean, the only established guy behind T.Y. Hilton is like Chester Rogers. They're actually sniffing around Cameron Meredith, the restricted free agent from the
exactly
Bears.
Right.
So they definitely need help. So anybody that goes to this passing game is at least going to be like on the sleeper radar, kind of. So I think in the end, obviously financially, really sucks for Grant. But speaking of Grant.
Hey,
that's really good timing.
Of Grant, it is Marcus Grant stepping in, suit and all. Look at this guy showing up.
We were just talking about your brother, Ryan Grant.
Ryan.
Oh, bro Ryan?
Yeah, bro Ryan, the shady dealings that Baltimore just reneged on their deal with some sketchy medical reports.
Really sad because, you know, I have had a good time in the city of Baltimore, but I'm sad they didn't treat my brother very
well. Yeah, what's up with that?
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Baltimore is a nice city.
It's a nice city.
I've
never been.
My whole mom's side of the family is from Baltimore.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was
there
cute
we go.
That, and it was cute that, like, now they have Crabtree. They're known for their crab cakes.
Hey.
It does seem
Crabtree football. That's what Maryland does.
Boom.
There you
Perfect.
Go. All right, so we talk about the Colts. Ryan Grant going there on a one-year, $5 million deal. So do they need pass catchers? Oh, you bet. That's why I think the Colts decided to then sign tight end Eric Ebron to a two-year, $15 million deal. That's a big deal.
That is a big deal.
For Eric Ebron, it was – it made sense from a football perspective. Financially, I'm not that sure, but I did think
Well, they have more money to burn than any team right now, so who cares?
It's a curious signing to me because they've got a good all-around tight end in Jack Doyle.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the guy that they should try to develop. Eric Ebron there confuses that tight end mix at least a bit for me. I'm surprised they didn't try to go blocking tight end because blocking has been such an issue in Indianapolis for so long. Eric Ebron, good athlete, not necessarily known for his strong run blocking ability. So I'm surprised. I was a little bit surprised from an X's and O's standpoint, Eric Ebron going from Detroit to Indianapolis. Again,
the other question is, what does that mean for a guy like Eric Swoop, who was supposed to be sort of...
That's a great question, but I mean, he was such a low draft pick. I think
he was, but there was a lot of hype with this guy.
There was.
His athleticism he could do, and so
you're
now all of a sudden they're just kicking him to the curb.
I think so. I think that's what they're going to do.
He's just one of those players that, like, there was a lot of hype, and then he got injured, and it's sometimes, if you're a low-priority player, you just lose that momentum, and the team has no investment in you and whatever. Yeah, it's a weird – for fantasy, it's not a great landing spot for Ebron, even though there's opportunity for
– It's terrible for Jack Doyle, too.
Yeah, well, I think these two guys probably cancel each other out a little bit. And, I know everybody's always chasing the magical two tight end set, but honestly, outside of Hernandez and Gronk, when have we ever really seen two guys strive at once? I don't think that it's ever really happened.
From a fantasy standpoint. Real life, it works well if they run it well. But from a fantasy standpoint –
Especially because you mentioned, Eric Ebron, definitely not a blocker. More of I think they can use him as a big slot type. It's good for your offense. It's never all that great for fantasy.
Yeah. I don't know. You mentioned the Patriots, great at double tight end sets. They re-signed running back Rex Burkhead to a 3-year, $9.75 million
deal. Whoop.
They also signed Jeremy Hill, who's obviously going to be Corey Dillon 2.0.
Okay, over
because he's going because he's
under,
going to the Patriots
over under touchdowns. I'm going to set it at 7.5.
What under huge under?
See,
what? Huge under.
Full disclosure, because Matt Harmon and I researcher Bill Smith kind of had this conversation on Friday, and I have rethought my stance from what because I originally said he's going to score 3 touchdowns, but then we actually thought about it and we're like, Jeremy Hill could legitimately have 300 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns next year.
No.
He really could.
No.
He really could. It could really happen.
I had to wrap my mind around that. What does that season look like?
He's going to have a ton of touchdowns and be kind of productive, or he'll be Mike Gillisley and he'll be inactive. He'll be deactivated for
Didn't they re-sign Mike Gillisley too?
He's still on the roster. They could cut him. They could trade him.
Okay.
He was inactive for so long.
Exactly. But I was just wondering if they had him under contract.
Look, you can think Jeremy Hill sucks or whatever, but he scored 29 touchdowns over his first 3 years, rushing touchdowns. 9, 11, 9. He's a proven touchdown scorer. He's a good goal line back.
I just looked at Mike Gillisley's contract. He's definitely getting cut.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a cap hit of $2.1 million, and it's dead cap of, nothing.
Yeah. He could easily be gone. But Jeremy Hill, I think, is a good fit as a power back there. They want to have
that
dimension.
I don't know. Mike Gillisley not being there opens the door. Deion Lewis obviously not being there opens the door a little bit as well.
The thing about the Patriots, obviously it is sort of the Sphinx's riddle trying to figure out their backfield situation, but I felt like we had a good handle on it last year for a while. We figured out the division of labor between Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead.
Both were playable.
All those guys until Burkhead got hurt, and then that kind of threw things into chaos a little bit.
Right.
But I get the feeling that this will kind of shake out the same way. Burkhead kind of becomes their main back because he can do a little bit of everything. He can run the ball. He can catch the ball.
Yeah.
And then
he's
Jeremy
Hill.
Healthy. Right. And Jeremy Hill becomes the hammer. He becomes that short yardage goal line back, which is where you get your 300 yards and 8 touchdowns from.
Yeah. Look, this is a nice contract for Burkhead. $5.5 million guaranteed at signing.
Yeah.
That's a nice chunk of change for
a
role playing back. And they definitely
who has not been able to stay healthy as well.
Yeah, for sure. He definitely needs to work.
They believe
in him. They obviously believe in him. When he came back from that injury, he did become at worst, their lead pass catching back over a guy like James White, who's had a lot of success with that organization.
Right.
They re-signed Rex Burkhead to this decent money. I mean, I think he's going to be like a mid-round fantasy pick and a fantasy starter in this offense. So, I mean, yeah, I'm fully on board with Burkhead and Jeremy Hill's at least interesting.
A couple of red flags regarding Rex Burkhead. You look at the production last year. I'm just saying. Look,
I don't even know what your flags are yet. I'm already flagging them as slander.
You're flagging my flags.
Yeah.
No. Look, you look at the overall production. You say, okay, pretty good. You know, a good touchdown maker, good yardage per game. His yards per carry, 4.1 yards per carry. So he was there. He was right there. But that being said, we use next gen stats.
Yeah.
His yards gained after close, not good. Not good at all, as a matter of fact. 3.2 yards gained after close. Again, smallish sample size, but just to give you an idea, 3.2 yards gained after close, that would be less than such luminaries as Peyton Barber. It's right around Chris Ivory level, who had 3.19. Amir Abdullah, who could not run the ball with any proficiency at all, 3.18. yards gained after close. Now, where Rex Burkhead, you're wondering, okay, well, how the hell did he get to 4.1 yards per carry? Well, this is the craziest thing. The offensive line was generating nearly a full yard for him before a defender got to within 1 yard. That helps. That's just the one red flag, and the health as well surrounding Rex.
I will say, if you look at back at 2016 when he was with the Bengals, he was up all the way there at 4.6
for yards gained after close.
Yes. So, and this stat does, if you don't sustain a ton of carries, if you get a ton of carries, it does tend to be really stable. But for these guys that vary in workload and team also, there's some shifts to it. So I would say that I won't put that as like a death nail for Burkhead.
No, just yet. No, I'm not. And again, listen, at the right price, I'm all in on Burkhead with Deion Lewis out the door. I'm just saying, you know, maybe pump the brakes. Just tap the brakes. Tap them. Just tap.
Marcus, do we tap the brakes or what?
No, man. We mash the gas and we go full steam ahead.
I know a lot of the fantasy community, too, will love Rex Burkhead moving forward.
Rex Burkhead is your favorite analyst's favorite running back.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Oh, fantasy Twitter's going to love Rex Burkhead, and that's fine. That's okay. Leggy Blunt, former Patriots running back, won a Super Bowl with the Eagles in a full revenge game. Leggy Blunt signed with the Detroit Lions, giving them a big-bodied back to pair, allegedly.
You mean the Lions are going to win the Super Bowl this year?
That's right. He's won two Super Bowls.
He's won two Super Bowls with different teams.
Lions to the Super Bowl. Here we go. LeGarrette Blunt, is he worth anything in standard scoring leagues? We're talking non-PPR.
Oh, yeah, man. Look, the Lions have been woeful as a running team.
They're so bad.
They give LeGarrette Blunt a decent deal in terms of, you know, what many teams have over the last couple of years, and I think they expect him to come in and be a power back. Obviously, this could
– Is he the lead?
On the early downs,
right
yes.
now.
But the thing is, though,
and they transition Amir Abdullah to passing downs.
I mean, they have Theo Riddick as their passing down back.
This also doesn't preclude them from letting one of those guys go and drafting.
Yeah,
somebody.
Yeah.
I really would like to see them get somebody, maybe a Darius Geis.
Yeah,
hello.
Somebody like that. You know, could I think of? You know, Nick Chubb, somebody like that. I think
would be a
good fit there in Detroit. I mean, so. Having LeGarrette Blunt on the roster does not preclude them from adding more help.
Yeah, this could all get thrown completely out of the window if and when they draft somebody in the second, third round, whatever, add another body to the mix. Because right now, all these guys are super predictable.
Right.
You know, if you know that if LeGarrette Blunt is in the game,
They're running the football.
You know if Theo Riddick is in the game, they're throwing the football. And if you know Amir Abdullah is in the game, nothing is going to really happen.
So right now they're a little too
predictable.
I wonder, though, because if they keep in LeGarrette Blunt, I think it can actually help mask what they're going to be doing a little bit because he's good in the pass blocking game. If they keep him in for pass blocking, then that would be nice. And then they can, again, mix up the run-pass option there. Because, again, as you mentioned, man, it was when Theo Riddick was in the game, He's
Blunt is one of the worst pass catching backs, and Riddick is one of the worst early down, like between the tackles runners.
I got you. Amir Abdullah, by the way, on the last year of his rookie deal, he will be an unrestricted free agent entering 2019, and I imagine he will be an unrestricted free agent.
One would think.
I would think so. Is the Hunter Henry breakout with the Chargers going to be delayed again? The great future Hall of Famer Antonio Gates partially blocking his way for the last couple of years. LCH, though, went and signed former Bronco tight end Virgil Green to a 3-year, $8.6 million deal.
That's really weird, right?
Virgil Green.
Nah, bro.
Look, Virgil Green is, I think, a very good run-blocking tight end.
Yeah.
Not a great pass-catching option. He's a good athlete, if you go look at his combine numbers. Good athlete, but good run blocker, not a great pass catcher. Hunter Henry, obviously, more of that move tight end. But still, I don't know. I mean, how many two tight end sets are they going to run there with the LA Chargers? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a guy like John Phillips, I think, is like the third tight end who'd been playing a little bit for them every now and again, I guess. They just souped that up here with the Virgil Green signing.
Yeah.
But I think that the key factor more is just Antonio
Gates. I don't care about Virgil Green. I don't necessarily really care about Antonio Gates either. I think a lot of folks were excited about Hunter Henry, though.
Yeah.
Well, I think some of it last year early, they definitely wanted to get Antonio Gates that record.
Yeah.
You know, but after that, I don't really understand why they didn't go to Hunter Henry. And I don't think they know why they didn't go to Hunter Henry, but I think they learned from the error of their ways, and I think you're going to start to see him get more targets.
They just have such a crowded passing
attack. That's what it is.
Like, they have Keenan Allen, who's going to demand a
120.
Bulk of, yeah, a bulk of it. More than that, probably. Like, oh, yeah,
probably.
130, 140. Yeah, I mean, he's great. He's incredible. Then you have Tyrell Williams got a second-round tender. They still want to use him. They have former first-round pick Mike Williams. They probably want to get him more involved if he's healthy.
Yeah.
They still have Travis Benjamin sticking around. And then you get into the tight ends.
That's
and
what
Melvin
I'm
Gordon's probably going to catch 30 That's what I'm passes. So just not a lot of footballs to go around in Los Angeles.
Hunter Henry, in terms of price, I would imagine is going to be obviously one of those late-round guys. Sign me up just in case he breaks out.
He's just going to probably be too expensive.
Yeah. That's the thing for me.
Yeah. All these – I mean, who cares? After the first few tight ends, like, who cares? Even the next guy we're talking about on the rundown, like,
ASJ?
I don't care about him really.
Austin Seferian Jenkins signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars, a 2-year, $10 million deal. That's a big investment in ASJ. Jacksonville then cut – longtime Jaguar, Mercedes Lewis. And then they also signed former Washington tight end, Niles Paul.
I really like Niles Paul.
What's up?
I'm raising my hand here. Yes. I don't know what the Jaguars are doing.
I don't know what they're doing either.
I get that they like their young wide receivers, right? That they like DeeDee Westbrook and Keelan Cole. And obviously they've made an investment in Marquise
Lee. Huge investment in Marquise Lee.
But like,
and a big investment in Dante Moncrief. His deal's fully guaranteed
for one year. So they kind of bring in some guys that are good, not necessarily great, but then they act like they don't want Blake Bortles to throw the ball because then they go get Andrew Norwell. It signals they're going to run. I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know what they're doing either.
I have no idea.
It just makes me not really interested in any of these guys for fantasy because I just don't know where the volume's going to come from. For a player like ASJ, who, while he was really good last year and he bounced back, he still wasn't like a big play threat or whatever. Maybe we can ask Manish about that when we get him on the phone. But
sure.
Like, I just don't see where the targets are going to come from him, Marquise Lee, and Dante Moncrief, and these guys like DeeDee Westbrook and Keelan Cole that people are going to want to break out while you're on a run-heavy offense that's still quarterbacked by Blake Bortles. If you just look at that, remove what you think about any of these players from the equation and just look at it from that level – I just don't really see how any of these guys.
And I think it's unfortunate, at least from a fantasy perspective. From real life, it's great because you're becoming multiple, you're versatile offensively. But from a fantasy standpoint, it's too bad because I tell you what, man, Keelan Cole and DeeDee Westbrook, they were two very young, exciting wide receivers down the stretch. But that was because there was no Allen Robinson. Allen Hurns was on the shelf. I mean, all these guys were, you know, in and out of the lineup. Marquise Lee was there. He was pretty good as well, but those two guys, man, Keelan Cole and DeeDee Westbrook, those were the guys that I was getting excited about.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much anymore. The Jaguars also released Allen Hurns, speaking of, who in 2015 had a huge year, 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. Now, he's getting a lot of interest from a lot of different teams, reportedly going to be visiting the Jets, reportedly visiting the Dallas Cowboys. Maybe he goes to Oakland. There's a lot of different places. A lot of different teams that would have interest in a guy in Allen Hurns who, if he comes in on a cost-controlled basis, is a very nice deep threat scoring option outside as a number two wide receiver, which would be good.
Yeah, which I'm excited to find out where he lands. I think he can ball when he's healthy.
Stays healthy.
Yeah, he's got to stay healthy. That's it.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We welcome in Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News. He is a Jets insider for Sportsnet New York as well. Manish, we welcome you into the podcast, man. How you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Doing well. We're talking all things Jets here. The big news was that the Jets made a massive move, trading up from 6 up to 3 in the upcoming draft. The price, oh my goodness, unbelievable. Not one, not two, but 3 second-round picks, 2 in 2018, one more in 2019. Can you break down what you know of the trade and how this deal got done?
Well, look, their first priority, and it was no secret, was to sign Kirk Cousins and to have him be their plug-and-play quarterback for hopefully the next 6 or 7 years. But they knew that that wasn't going to be a slam dunk, and so they did their homework back in January. I was told at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, they looked at the teams and discussed with the teams ahead of them in the draft what it might take to move up a few spots to position themselves to get one of the top three quarterbacks that they coveted. So when it became clear that Cousins was ultimately going to Minnesota early last week, they pivoted pretty quickly, and that's why it only took about 4 days of discussions with Indianapolis before they made this deal. They knew that it was a possibility. It was going to be their plan B all along. And obviously, if they had their druthers, they wouldn't have to had given up those 3 second-round picks. But this is a franchise and an organization that needs a quarterback answer. They preferred Cousins. That didn't happen, so they're going to move on to the next best thing in their eyes.
You mentioned them giving up 3 second-round draft picks. It's a hefty price, man. I think just about damn near everybody, including myself, thought that they overpaid. That being said, why did the Jets feel like they needed to make this move?
Well, first, you're right. On paper, 3 second-round picks to move up 3 spots is a bit excessive, but I think you've got to factor in the real-life dynamics here, and that is that they desperately needed to do this for a franchise quarterback, and there were other quarterback-needy teams like Denver at 5, Buffalo, who is now surging up the draft board now at 12, don't count out Miami at 11. All those teams are trying to jockey for position to get one of these quarterbacks. So when you take all of that into the equation, I don't think it's a terrible thing that they gave up those 3 second-round picks. We'll find out. If they hit on the quarterback, it doesn't matter. Just because it's the fourth year of this Mike Maccagnan, Todd Bowles regime. So you ask me, why do they feel a pressing need to get a quarterback? They've really had the unenviable honor, I guess is a way of putting it, of having 2 journeyman quarterbacks in Ryan Fitzpatrick and most recently Josh McCown have career years. And even though that felt good in the moment, I think that has kind of hindered their long-term chances of getting
that's
a quarterback
a
in some of these other couple drafts. So that's where they're at. They could not leave this offseason without a quarterback, and that's why they did what they did.
All right, so
the pursuit of a franchise quarterback ends in getting a franchise quarterback. Nobody cares.
What the price is, what you
took. No one cares what path you followed on the map as long as you got there.
It's true. Okay, so now obviously they're thinking about taking quarterback here with the top 3 pick. Do you have any idea which quarterback they are targeting or maybe would prefer at number 3?
Well, I think they're operating under the assumption that the Cleveland Browns will take Sam Darnold. So the question for them really becomes, are they going to choose or have the choice, I should say, between Josh Rosen and Josh Allen? Because in their minds, those 3 guys, Darnold, Rosen, and Allen, are cut above everybody else at that position in this draft class. And that includes Baker Mayfield. And even though they really like his competitiveness and his heart and desire, Mayfield I'm talking about, they don't view him in that same group. So they might not have a choice. And that's what's really interesting about this trade. Typically, when you give up that much draft capital, you're going up for a specific guy that you're targeting. And the Jets really don't know who's going to be available at 3 because they don't know who the Giants are going to take or what the Giants are going to do at 2. Would they take Eli Manning's successor, or are they going to trade out so that a Denver or a Buffalo or a Miami can jump in there and take a quarterback? So the Jets are really beholden to what the Giants do, ironically. So they might not have a choice. They might just take the third guy that's left for them. That's why I think it's intriguing. If they do have an option between the 2 Joshes, Rosen and Allen, what will they do? I tend to think that they will go with Josh Rosen.
Well, looking at guys that are currently on the roster, there's a Josh on the roster and Josh McCown who just re-signed. But then they also go in and get Teddy Bridgewater. And Bridgewater, to me, is kind of an interesting figure, kind of an enigma a little bit. What is their view on him? I mean, is he going to have a chance to compete for the starting job? How do they view him in terms of that quarterback competition?
Yeah, Marcus, that was a really interesting signing because, I mean, this is a guy with a pedigree. This is also a 25-year-old quarterback, you know, who has taken his team, or at least been part of a team that went to the playoffs, yet hasn't really played in the last two seasons. He only signed a one-year deal for $6 million, but for all practical purposes, it's just a $500,000 deal at the moment. That's the only amount of money they guaranteed. So there is no assurance that Teddy Bridgewater will be on the Week 1 roster. In fact, I think that if McCown gets through the offseason unscathed, and by that I mean he stays healthy, and he probably will, because they're probably going to put him on ice in the preseason like they did a year ago, and this rookie quarterback they bring in shows enough promise, I'm not sure where there's room for Bridgewater. He's in a precarious spot, right? He is stuck between McCown and the guy who they think is going to be their future quarterback. So the fact that it's a one-year deal with very little guaranteed money leads me to think that, you know, he's not guaranteed to be on this team. It was a peculiar decision, in my opinion, from his end. I cannot believe that he could not find a better situation out there in which there was a clearer path for him to either be the starting quarterback at some point or to be the clear number two. Because right now, there's a real possibility that even if he were on the roster, he would be the third string quarterback.
I like the decision for him to go to New York, but the problem is, you mentioned, $500,000 guaranteed. That's not any kind of investment whatsoever. I'm not surprised by the landing spot. I'm surprised that his representation allowed him to take a deal that did not guarantee him, financially anyways, a spot on that roster. Because, as you mentioned, $500,000 guaranteed. He gets another $500,000 for a workout bonus. He might not even make it there. I mean, literally, they might just take quarterback at three and just say, well, hey, Teddy, thanks for nothing. Here's 500 grand. Enjoy yourself. It's curious to me. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Manish. I think I cut you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're right. You know, you can hear players and coaches talk about how, you know, they love playing for this team. They love signing. They signed here because they see a fit. And all that stuff is great. And Teddy Bridgewater actually spoke today about you know, how confident he is in his coaching staff and how confident he is in himself to kind of become the player that he once was. And I have no doubt that he's got tremendous belief in his skill set. But ultimately, when you look at these contracts, that will tell you how the team perceives the player.
Right.
And the $500,000 guaranteed and then that option bonus, the roster bonus down the line, that really tells you how the Jets view him. And again, I don't think a lot of teams were knocking down his door. And that is a little bit surprising to me, given, you know, his past success in this league and given his age. But clearly, you know, even the Vikings weren't in any kind of hurry to bring him back. So that gives you a number. That number and the details of that contract kind of gives you a little bit of insight into the truth of how the Jets view Teddy Bridgewater.
You know, getting away from quarterbacks, you wrote recently that the Jets were – making a run at Jerick McKinnon. Obviously, that didn't work out for them. They do sign Isaiah Crowell. Do you see them rolling into the season with this Crowell, maybe Bilal Powell backfield, or do they do something else later in the draft to try and get a running back of a Jerick McKinnon-type guy?
Well, I think that type of player would have been an option if they had gotten Kirk Cousins and kept their two second-round picks. One of those two second-round picks, you know, very well could have been you know, the USC kid, who's a good zone blocking runner, or another running back,
Ronald Jones, yeah, or Sonny Michel.
Right. Yeah, I mean, those guys could have been options. They're clearly no longer a part of the equation because the Jets aren't going to pick into the third round. But
right. What's
interesting about, you know, what the Jets tried to do in free agency, well, they really, in an ideal world, liked to pair up Jerick McKinnon and Isaiah Crowell. If they had signed McKinnon, that would not have precluded them from bringing in Crowell because they see both of those guys as the Devontae Freeman, Tevin Coleman parallel in this offense, because the Jets are going to run a very similar offense to what Kyle Shanahan runs in San Francisco. And, you know, the Mike Shanahan fingerprints are all over both of those teams, obviously with Kyle, but with Jeremy Bates, who worked with Shanahan in Denver, and Rick Dennison, who spent the better part of a decade with Shanahan in Denver, is now the run game coordinator for the Jets. So a lot of similarities an offensive philosophy. And that negotiation was particularly interesting because when you look at what San Francisco ultimately paid Jerick McKinnon, we're talking about $12 million that McKinnon's going to get in 2018, which is an incredible number.
Oh, you know, unbelievable.
For a player who hasn't really had those types of stats that jump off the page. But that just shows you how much Kyle Shanahan coveted McKinnon, and the Jets were the other team that really wanted him. But because he's not part of the equation, Marcus, what you asked before, I think it is going to be a Crowell, a Bilal Powell, Eli Maguire combination. You know, they view Isaiah Crowell as that, you know, power running back in this outside zone scheme that they're going to employ, and they wanted kind of a jack-of-all-trades guy like a Jerick McKinnon who you can line up in the slot and be a pass-catching option as well. They don't have that to that level on their roster, but Bilal Powell can catch passes. They like Eli Maguire as a third-down back as well. So it'll be a mix and match. It's not going to be a situation where Isaiah Crowell is going to morph into the Todd Gurley of this offense because, you know, Sean McVay runs a similar offense as well.
Manish, I know you in the past have said that the Jets aren't ready to give up on Robbie Anderson. Is that still true? Is there any updates on him? Like how they feel about him? And what was he kind of like this past season? Obviously, he's a guy who's been arrested a couple times here recently.
Yeah, his legal entanglements aren't close to being finished. He's got two outstanding issues, and they're going to be at least in the next few weeks, are going to kind of move their way through the court system. I would be surprised, frankly, if Robbie Anderson were not suspended for some portion of the 2018 season for those transgressions. Look, he's a very confident player. The Jets were pleasantly surprised by his production. I don't think he's a number one in this league. Maybe he's a number two in this league. Regardless, you know, he's a productive player. But, some of the issues he's had off the field, some of the maturity issues, clearly need to change, or he's not going to be a part of this team beyond this season. I don't think they're ready. In fact, I know they're not ready to give up on him just yet, barring any kind of, you know, future issues off the field. But, I mean, this is a player who's got a lot of opportunity, a lot of promise. He just can't blow it. You know, there are a lot of people close to him that realize that, you know, being around the people that he grew up in Florida is probably not the best thing for him. I think he needs a mentor, an older guy to kind of guide him and help him. And, you know, he's had guys on the Jets during the season to fill that role, but you know, when the offseason rolls around, he's on his own. He's a grown man. He's got to grow up, for lack of a better phrase.
Robbie Anderson arrested on 9 different charges, including 3 felonies. Again, Manish mentioned it. I would be shocked if he is not suspended for part or all of 2018. I'm sure that looming punishment is a big reason why the Jets now interested in guys like Terrell Pryor and Allen Hurns, who are coming in for visits into the New York Jets facility. Two deep threat wide receivers that could provide that vertical speed that Anderson gave them last year. All right, here's my last question for you, Manish. How hot is the seat for Todd Bowles? Because as you mentioned, a number of years now have passed under the Todd Bowles. And here's my thing. I thought he did a good job last year managing a very difficult situation. As a matter of fact, I think the Jets really overachieved last year. A lot of folks were saying this is a team that legitimately could go 0-16. And I thought they were very competitive in damn near every game they played in 2017. But that being said, it just feels like the fan base not happy with Todd Bowles. How hot is the seat for Bulls, especially given the fact that they got a guy like Jeremy Bates kind of sort of waiting in the wings there as well?
Are you promoting Jeremy Bates?
I'm not.
Yeah, that's aggressive.
I'm not. I'm just saying when there's a hot young name like Jeremy Bates, I don't know, some things out there.
I think that Jeremy Bates is a terrific coach. I mean, he fell off the map for a while, but if you talk to football people, and the guy is brilliant in terms of X's and O's and scheming, and I'm very curious to see what he does with this rookie quarterback.
Right.
Look, the head coach and the GM both got 2-year extensions in December. They're technically signed through 2020. That obviously doesn't mean that much. But I think the fact that they're going to go with a rookie quarterback actually helps out Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan.
Good point.
You shouldn't expect miracles in 2018 with a rookie quarterback playing part of the season. I would imagine if he doesn't start week one, at some point, they would turn the reins over and let Josh McCown playing it on fire again.
Right.
He's going to play, right? So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't know if they have a winning record, but this quarterback shows promise. If they continue to play hard as they did a year ago, I think Bowles will be back. I think Kevin will be back. Really, the pivotal year in my mind, given the state of this franchise right now, is 2019. They need to make a serious playoff run. They did not make the playoffs in 2019. 2018, you know, as long as they continue to show progress, I think the head coach and the GM are okay. But, the ownership has been exceedingly patient, I think, with this group of guys, and I think they'll give him at least one more year, and then we'll see what happens after 2019.
Manish Mehta from the New York Daily News. Follow him on Twitter for all things New York Jets related. M Mehta, spelled MEHTANYDN. M Mehta NYDN on Twitter. Follow him there. Manish, we appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Manish.
All right, so I kind of wanted to decompress after that because that's a lot of information that I think Manish gave us.
Yep.
I'm interested. I kind of thought maybe Baker Mayfield was in the mix, but it doesn't sound like he is.
Yeah, it's
going
to
be a Rosen.
Kind of consensus, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a Rosen Josh Allen type deal there, which I think is interesting. But regardless, you know, again, I don't know how hot the seat is for Todd Bowles, but I do think that they overachieved last year. Can they do it again in 2018? I mean, y'all had a funny hashtag last year.
Never Jets.
Never Jets.
Which, by the way, and I didn't say anything, but Manish called me out on it too on Twitter early in the season. Yeah, he called me out on the Never Jets hashtag.
Glad he called you out since I
think you're the one. You're the one who started it, and yet I'm the one who gets called out for it. But
that's appropriate. I feel like that's appropriate.
You know how he knows though. He said he's an ardent listener of the podcast as well.
Oh, good.
Sorry about that.
But no, again, it's is this a team that can, you know, I don't want to say replicate because they 5-11 last year. They weren't very good from a win-loss perspective, but I do think they overachieved because, again, a lot of folks forget going into 2017. People were saying the Jets weren't going to win a game.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess they can, but I think part of it is also that Josh McCown overachieved. I mean, a lot of guys on that team overachieved.
Oh, my God, he did.
And you wonder whether or not they can do that again. I'm not gonna go out here and say they're gonna go 0-16. I think they have more talent than that, obviously. But I think this is
Robbie Anderson was such a pleasant surprise,
such a big part of that. And if he's not there, you know, what does that do for him?
Yeah,
they do get Quincy Enunwa back.
Okay,
who could certainly help that passing game.
True.
You know, curious what happens whether if they do go with the Crowell Bilal Powell backfield.
I forgot
there.
About Elijah McGuire.
Yeah, remember he was like a thing for a week.
You know
or
what
two?
I'm saying? Yeah.
So you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess. Off the top of my head, I see another 4-12, 5-11, maybe 6-10 if things go well for them kind of season.
Sure,
but I think Manish is right. It is what happens the year after, and how these draft picks develop, and then what they do in free agency that will determine their future.
All right, there you go. While we got you guys here, we talked about Isaiah Crowell getting into this Jets backfield mix. I guess what's an appropriate area to kind of draft him?
Never.
Wow.
Never? Why never? I mean, he's projected to be a starting running back here.
Who cares?
No?
It's probably a middling offense, early down banger. I felt like I said this when he signed. Like, I'm probably not going to be interested in either of these guys.
Neither one?
No, but, you know, Crowell's going to be the kind of guy that you're in, like, the sixth round. And
you never start.
And he's hanging around.
You never want to play. You never want to play one single time during the year, so what's the point?
But, you know, he's going to get drafted.
Not even as a flex play?
So I'll let somebody else do it.
What's an appropriate price for him?
Never.
Right now. I mean, forget you, Matt. I'm talking about normal people.
People that make bad decisions?
I mean, I'll say 6.
I think that's a little early. I think he'll go later, especially because he's playing for the Jets.
Yep.
I think he'll go in the 8th.
Right, but
I think he'll be like a 80 to 100 pick.
I keep saying this. I say this all the time. People are so thirsty for running backs. People just keep reaching. Just reach.
Stretch. Give it to me.
Like, you know,
so go get him when one of the other guys gets hurt.
You know, here's an interesting question. Who gets drafted first, Jarek McKinnon or Isaiah Crowell?
McKinnon.
McKinnon,
the hype, the hype train is going to run people over.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. It's fun to talk about these teams hyper, you know, specifically sometimes. So it's nice to bring in guys like Manish Mehta. And when we talked to Troy Rank about Denver, it's fun to kind of really bore in on some of these teams because, man, they bring in some insight that you forget about. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was good. It was fun talking to him. Again, follow him on Twitter if you get the chance. All right, let's close out your show with a round of daily daps. Daps. We shall start with you, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant.
I got a couple. One.
Yes.
Last night had a chance to go see Pacific Rim Uprising.
Yes.
The sequel to but wait, I just have to preface this by saying Pacific Rim, the first one, is a documentary-style look at humanity's future. The kaiju are real.
The kaiju are real.
And we have lagged behind dangerously in our production of Jaegers.
The kaiju, they're just chilling.
They're coming.
The sea
they're coming
right
to
now.
Get us all. Yeah. Pacific Rim Uprising, it's not as good as the original, but it's fun. It's a fun popcorn movie. It's a good matinee.
Okay.
You know,
I had my concerns.
Giant robots fighting other giant robots and giant monsters.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing.
Yep.
The fight scenes are great.
Okay.
You know, like I said, it's not a great film, but it's a fun film.
Okay.
So I'll go do that.
Good.
But my real dap is to the Franciscoviches.
Yeah.
Our man franchise, man. Yeah, he's all
franchise.
Grown up, man. We had a chance to go out and celebrate with him and his lovely new bride, Mackenzie, out in Palm Springs. It was fantastic.
It was a gorgeous venue.
Awesome. We had a great day. You know, we enjoyed the festivities.
Oh, yes, we did.
So, but congratulations to our guy franchise and Mackenzie. We wish you the best. And I'm glad that I was able to be a part of it.
Harmon got after it. Let me just put it that way. Harmon after it. Matt Harmon, what do you got?
I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but I can confirm. Yeah, no, I'll give a dap to the franchise wedding, too. It was awesome. It was great to be a part of it. And it. You know, Palm Springs is an awesome destination for it, too. So they really knocked it out of the park. A-plus wedding, good execution. Good scheme, good execution. that's what you like to see.
And a lot of talented players involved.
Yes.
You know.
And I'll also give a dap to my dad, who was out here last week. I know I always feel like I dap like local places to eat in Los Angeles, which, again, I'm sure is really great for all the people that don't live in Los Angeles or the west side of L.A., especially because that's the only place worth going.
West Side Bubble.
Inside the Bubble, Santa Monica Steakhouse, Meat on the Ocean. Phenomenal. Expensive, but phenomenal. That's why I went there with my dad.
Okay.
We had a
good call.
We had a damn good meal there. They got, like, cheese and meat plates and obviously the steak and everything. It's you guys, at least. Christina, everybody here, you should go try it. I don't know about the people listening who don't live here.
Yeah.
They don't care about this, but you all should try it.
Okay, so here's my question. here's my question. At the end of the meal, was there that, like, slight, like, half-second moment of, like, hey, who's picking up this tab?
I was like, well, you know, Dad. I mean, we could split it.
Good call. Good move. Daily daps for me, Franciscovich wedding. If you want to find some of the pictures on Instagram, they got a little hashtag. It's Francisco Hitch.
I forgot to use the hashtag.
Way to go.
Me too. Francisco Hitched is the hashtag if you'd like to find it. And enjoy those photos on the internets. I will also give a daily dap to Urban Dictionary. They always win. It's great. I went to Google. And if you guys want to do this, you can as well. It's always fun. You can Google, what does Ric Flair drip mean? And go to the Urban Dictionary for that. But it's very fun. Maybe I should just – should I look it up now?
I'm
what
Googling.
Does Ric
No.
Drip?
Don't say it on the podcast. Let people look it up.
Let
people look it up.
Okay. You can look it up. Anyways, it is go look it up on Urban Dictionary. It's actually quite funny because it's nonsensical. And, I guess the phrase is nonsensical, too, as well. But anyways, regardless, it's fun times. I love Urban Dictionary. It gave me a good, solid chuckle. So there you go. Producer Christina, close us out. What do you got?
I'm daily dapping the Kentucky men's basketball team.
Okay.
Shock.
I have to.
All right.
We play tomorrow.
Okay.
So I'm sure all of you guys are going to be watching and rooting for my Cats.
Probably not. Who are they playing?
They
have an easy draw now that everyone got upset. Literally all the top seeds are gone.
Yeah, UNC's out, so I don't even have to pretend to care anymore.
North Carolina gone. Arizona gone. Virginia gone.
See, all the more reason to.
What is happening?
We play Kansas State.
Kansas State.
So all the more reason to be a Kentucky fan.
So it's Wildcat v. Wildcat. Wildcat on Wildcat violence.
It is. It's going to be blue Wildcat v. purple Wildcat.
Yeah, you know.
It's going to be a battle of the terrible Wildcat logos.
Okay.
Yeah.
K-State's mascot, though, trips me out because it's a normal human body.
But with a cat head.
Mascots
are pretty wild.
I mean, but I mean, I don't, I like mascots.
Right, but it's not, he's not all furry. He's just like, it's like if you just,
no,
put
it's
a
just a normal,
it's like,
yeah.
My, and if, Harmon, if you just put a mascot head on, but had your regular clothes on.
Yeah.
That's their mascot.
That's their
that
mascot.
Sounds pretty sick. it's still like I could do some damage if I had a, you know, cat head. I would be like some sort of monster.
Cause what, yeah, what would that monster be called? Half cat, half human.
Catmon?
Cat Harmon.
Cat Harmon. There it is.
I think that was actually a parody account for a while.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
Oh, that's probably a sign to sign off there.
All right, what a great show we had here today. For Matt Harmon, for MG My Guy Marcus Grant, for producer Christina, I'm James Coe. We'll catch you next week.